Justice Barrett delivered the opinion for a unanimous court. Like millions of Americans, James Freed maintained a Facebook account on which he posted about a wide range of topics, including his family and his job. Like most of those Americans, Freed occasionally received unwelcome comments on his posts. In response, Freed took a step familiar to Facebook users. He deleted the comments and blocked those who made them. For most people with a Facebook account, that would have been the end of it. But Kevin Lindke, one of the unwelcome commenters, sued Freed for violating his right to free speech. Because the First Amendment binds only the government, this claim is a non-starter if Freed posted as a private citizen. Freed, however, is not only a private citizen, but also the city manager of Port Huron, Michigan. And while Freed insists that his Facebook account was strictly personal, Lindke argues that Freed acted in his official capacity when he silenced Lindke's speech. When a government official posts about job-related topics on social media, it can be difficult to tell whether the speech is official or private. We hold that such speech is attributable to the state only if the official, 1, possessed actual authority to speak on the state's behalf, and 2, purported to exercise that authority when he spoke on social media. Part 1. Section A. Sometime before 2008, while he was a college student, James Freed created a private Facebook profile that he shared only with friends. In Facebook lingo, friends are not necessarily confidants or even real-life acquaintances. Users become friends when one accepts a friend request from another. After that, the two can generally see and comment on one another's posts and photos. When Freed, an avid Facebook user, began nearing the platform's 5,000 friend limit, he converted his profile to a public page. This meant that anyone could see and comment on his posts. Freed chose public figure for his page's category. James Freed for its title, and James R. Freed 1 as its username. Facebook did not require Freed to satisfy any special criteria either to convert his Facebook profile to a public page or to describe himself as a public figure. In 2014, Freed was appointed city manager of Port Huron, Michigan, and he updated his Facebook page to reflect the new job. For his profile picture, Freed chose a photo of himself in a suit with a city lapel pin. In the About section, Freed added his title, a link to the city's website, and the city's general email address. He described himself as Daddy to Lucy, Husband to Jesse, and City Manager, Chief Administrative Officer for the citizens of Port Huron, Michigan. As before his appointment, Freed operated his Facebook page himself, and as before his appointment, Freed posted prolifically and primarily about his personal life. He uploaded hundreds of photos of his daughter. He shared about outings like the daddy-daughter dance, dinner with his wife, and a family nature walk. He posted Bible verses, updates on home improvement projects, and pictures of his dog, Winston. Freed also posted information related to his job. He described mundane activities like visiting local high schools, as well as splashier ones like starting reconstruction of the city's boat launch. He shared news about the city's efforts to streamline leaf pickup and stabilize water intake from a local river. He highlighted communications from other city officials, like a press release from the fire chief and an annual financial report from the finance department. On occasion, Fried solicited feedback from the public. For instance, he once posted a link to a city survey about housing and encouraged his audience to complete it. Fried's readers frequently commented on his posts, sometimes with reactions, for example, "Good job, it takes skills," on a picture of his sleeping daughter, and sometimes with questions, for example, "Can you allow city residents to have chickens?" Fried often replied to the comments, including by answering inquiries from city residents. He occasionally deleted comments that he thought were derogatory or stupid. After the COVID-19 pandemic began, Fried posted about that. Some posts were personal, like pictures of his family spending time at home and outdoors to stay safe and save lives. Some contained general information, like case counts and weekly hospitalization numbers. Others related to Fried's job, like a description of the city's hiring freeze and a screenshot of a press release about a relief package that he helped prepare. Enter Kevin Linke. Unhappy with the city's approach to the pandemic, Linke visited Fried's page and said so. For example, in response to one of Fried's posts, Linke commented that the city's pandemic response was abysmal and that the city deserves better. When Fried posted a photo of himself and the mayor picking up takeout from a local restaurant, Linke complained that while residents were suffering, the city's leaders were eating at an expensive restaurant instead of out-talking to the community. Initially, Fried deleted Linke's comments. Ultimately, he blocked him. Once blocked, Linke could see Fried's posts but could no longer comment on them. Section B. Linke sued Fried under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, alleging that Fried had violated his First Amendment rights. As Linke saw it, he had the right to comment on Fried's Facebook page, which he characterized as a public forum. Fried, Linke claimed, had engaged in impermissible viewpoint discrimination by deleting unfavorable comments and blocking the people who made them. The district court granted summary judgment to Fried. Because only state action can give rise to liability under Section 1983, Linke's claim depended on whether Fried acted in a private or public capacity. The prevailing personal quality of Fried's posts, the absence of government involvement with his account, and the lack of posts conducting official business led the court to conclude that Fried managed his Facebook page in his private capacity. So, Linke's claim failed. The Sixth Circuit affirmed. It noted that the case law is murky as to when a state official acts personally and when he acts officially for purposes of Section 1983. To sort the personal from the official, that court asks whether the official is performing an actual or apparent duty of his office, or if he could not have behaved as he did without the authority of his office. Applying this precedent to the social media context, the Sixth Circuit held that an official's activity is state action if the text of state law requires an officeholder to maintain a social media account. The official uses state resources or government staff to run the account, or the account belongs to an office rather than an individual officeholder. These situations, the Sixth Circuit explained, make an official's social media activity fairly attributable to the state, and it concluded that Freed's activity was not. The Sixth Circuit's approach to state action in the social media context differs from that of the Second and Ninth Circuits, which focus less on the connection between the official's authority and the account, and more on whether the account's appearance and content look official. We granted certiorari. Part 2. Section 1983 provides a cause of action against every person who, under color of any statute, ordinance, regulation, custom, or usage of any state, deprives someone of a federal constitutional or statutory right. As its text makes clear, this provision protects against acts attributable to a state, not those of a private person. This limit tracks that of the 14th Amendment, which obligates states to honor the constitutional rights that Section 1983 protects. The need for governmental action is also explicit in the Free Speech Clause, the guarantee that Linke invokes in this case. In short, the state action requirement is both well established and reinforced by multiple sources. In the run-of-the-mill case, state action is easy to spot. Courts do not ordinarily pause to consider whether Section 1983 applies to the actions of police officers, public schools, or prison officials. And, absent some very unusual facts, no one would credit a child's assertion of free speech rights against a parent, or a plaintiff's complaint that a nosy neighbor unlawfully searched his garage. Sometimes, however, the line between private conduct and state action is difficult to draw. Griffin v. Maryland, 1964, is a good example. There, we held that a security guard at a privately owned amusement park engaged in state action when he enforced the park's policy of segregation against black protesters. Though employed by the park, the guard had been deputized as a sheriff of Montgomery County and possessed the same power and authority as any other deputy sheriff. The state had therefore allowed its power to be exercised by someone in the private sector. And the source of the power, not the identity of the employer, controlled. By and large, our state action precedents have grappled with variations of the question posed in Griffin: whether a nominally private person has engaged in state action for purposes of Section 1983. Today's case, by contrast, requires us to analyze whether a state official engaged in state action or functioned as a private citizen. This court has had little occasion to consider how the state action requirement applies in this circumstance. The question is difficult, especially in a case involving a state or local official who routinely interacts with the public. Such officials may look like they are always on the clock, making it tempting to characterize every encounter as part of the job. But the state action doctrine avoids such broad-brush assumptions, for good reason. While public officials can act on behalf of the state, they are also private citizens with their own constitutional rights. By excluding from liability acts of officers in the ambit of their personal pursuits, the state action requirement protects a robust sphere of individual liberty for those who serve as public officials or employees. The dispute between Linke and Freed illustrates this dynamic. Freed did not relinquish his First Amendment rights when he became city manager. On the contrary, The First Amendment protects a public employee's right, in certain circumstances, to speak as a citizen addressing matters of public concern. This right includes the ability to speak about information related to or learned through public employment, so long as the speech is not itself ordinarily within the scope of the employee's duties. Where the right exists, editorial control over speech and speakers on the public employee's properties or platforms is part and parcel of it. Thus, if Freed acted in his private capacity when he blocked Linke and deleted his comments, he did not violate Linke's First Amendment rights. Instead, he exercised his own. So Linke cannot hang his hat on Freed's status as a state employee. The distinction between private conduct and state action turns on substance, not labels. Private parties can act with the authority of the state, and state officials have private lives and their own constitutional rights. Categorizing conduct, therefore, can require a close look. Part 3. A close look is definitely necessary in the context of a public official using social media. There are approximately 20 million state and local government employees across the nation, with an extraordinarily wide range of job descriptions, from governors, mayors, and police chiefs to teachers, healthcare professionals, and transportation workers. Many use social media for personal communication, official communication, or both, and the line between the two is often blurred. Moreover, social media involves a variety of different and rapidly changing platforms, each with distinct features for speaking, viewing, and removing speech. The court has frequently emphasized that the state action doctrine demands a fact-intensive inquiry. We repeat that caution here. That said, our precedent articulates principles that govern cases analogous to this one. For the reasons we explain below, a public official's social media activity constitutes state action under Section 1983 only if the official, 1, possessed actual authority to speak on the state's behalf, and 2, purported to exercise that authority when he spoke on social media. The appearance and function of the social media activity are relevant at the second step, but they cannot make up for a lack of state authority at the first. Section A. The first prong of this test is grounded in the bedrock requirement that the conduct allegedly causing the deprivation of a federal right be fairly attributable to the state. An act is not attributable to a state unless it is traceable to the state's power or authority. Private action, no matter how official it looks, lacks the necessary lineage. This rule runs through our cases. Griffin stresses that the security guard was possessed of state authority and purported to act under that authority. West v. Adkins states that the traditional definition of state action requires that the defendant have exercised power possessed by virtue of state law and made possible only because the wrongdoer is clothed with the authority of state law. Lugar v. Edmondson Oil emphasizes that state action exists only when the claimed deprivation has resulted from the exercise of a right or privilege having its source in state authority. By contrast, when the challenged conduct entails functions and obligations in no way dependent on state authority, state action does not exist. Linke's focus on appearance skips over this crucial step. He insists that Fried's social media activity constitutes state action because Fried's Facebook page looks and functions like an outlet for city updates and citizen concerns. But Fried's conduct is not attributable to the state unless he was possessed of state authority to post city updates and register citizen concerns. If the state did not entrust Fried with these responsibilities, it cannot fairly be blamed for the way he discharged them. Lindke imagines that Fried can conjure the power of the state through his own efforts. Yet the presence of state authority must be real, not a mirage. Importantly, Lindke must show more than that Fried had some authority to communicate with residents on behalf of Port Huron. The alleged censorship must be connected to speech on a matter within Fried's bailiwick. For example, imagine that Fried posted a list of local restaurants with health code violations and deleted snarky comments made by other users. If public health is not within the portfolio of the city manager, then neither the post nor the deletions would be traceable to Fried's state authority, because he had none. For state action to exist, the state must be responsible for the specific conduct of which the plaintiff complains. There must be a tie between the official's authority and the gravamen of the plaintiff's complaint. To be clear, the misuse of power possessed by virtue of state law constitutes state action. While the state action doctrine requires that the state have granted an official the type of authority that it used to violate rights, for example, the power to arrest, it encompasses cases where his particular action, example, an arrest made with excessive force, violated state or federal law. Every Section 1983 suit alleges a misuse of power because no state actor has the authority to deprive someone of a federal right. To misuse power, however, one must possess it in the first place. Where does the power come from? Section 1983 lists the potential sources: statute, ordinance, regulation, custom, or usage. Statutes, ordinances, and regulations refer to written law through which a state can authorize an official to speak on its behalf. Custom and usage encompasses persistent practices of state officials that are so permanent and well settled that they carry the force of law. So a city manager like Fried would be authorized to speak for the city if written law like an ordinance empowered him to make official announcements. He would also have that authority even in the absence of written law if, for instance, prior city managers have purported to speak on its behalf and have been recognized to have had that authority for so long that the manager's power to do so has become permanent and well settled. And if an official has authority to speak for the state, he may have the authority to do so on social media, even if the law does not make that explicit. Determining the scope of an official's power requires careful attention to the relevant statute, ordinance, regulation, custom, or usage. In some cases, a grant of authority over particular subject matter may reasonably encompass authority to speak about it officially. For example, state law might grant a high-ranking official like the director of the State Department of Transportation broad responsibility for the state highway system that, in context, includes authority to make official announcements on that subject. At the same time, courts must not rely on excessively broad job descriptions to conclude that a government employee is authorized to speak for the state. The inquiry is not whether making official announcements could fit within the job description. It is whether making official announcements is actually part of the job that the state entrusted the official to do. In sum, a defendant, like Freed, must have actual authority rooted in written law or long-standing custom to speak for the state. That authority must extend to speech of the sort that caused the alleged rights deprivation. If the plaintiff cannot make this threshold showing of authority, he cannot establish state action. Section B. For social media activity to constitute state action, an official must not only have state authority, he must also purport to use it. State officials have a choice about the capacity in which they choose to speak. Generally, a public employee purports to speak on behalf of the state while speaking in his official capacity or when he uses his speech to fulfill his responsibilities pursuant to state law. If the public employee does not use his speech in furtherance of his official responsibilities, he is speaking in his own voice. Consider a hypothetical from the offline world. A school board president announces at a school board meeting that the board has lifted pandemic-era restrictions on public schools. The next evening, at a backyard barbecue with friends whose children attend public schools, he shares that the board has lifted the pandemic-era restrictions. The former is state action taken in his official capacity as school board president. The latter is private action taken in his personal capacity as a friend and neighbor. While the substance of the announcement is the same, the context, an official meeting versus a private event, differs. He invoked his official authority only when he acted as a school board president. The context of Freed's speech is hazier than that of the hypothetical school board president. Had Freed's account carried a label like, "This is the personal page of James R. Freed," or a disclaimer like, "The views expressed are strictly my own," he would be entitled to a heavy, though not irrebuttable, presumption that all of the posts on his page were personal. Markers like these give speech the benefit of clear context. Just as we can safely presume that speech at a backyard barbecue is personal, we can safely presume that speech on a personal page is personal, absent significant evidence indicating that the post is official. Conversely, context can make clear that a social media account purports to speak for the government, for instance, when an account belongs to a political subdivision, like the City of Port Huron Facebook page, or is passed down to whomever occupies a particular office, like the Port Huron City Manager Instagram account. Freed's page, however, was not designated either personal or official, raising the prospect that it was mixed use, a place where he made some posts in his personal capacity and others in his capacity as city manager. Categorizing posts that appear on an ambiguous page like Freed's is a fact-specific undertaking in which the post's content and function are the most important considerations. In some circumstances, the post's content and function might make the plaintiff's argument a slam dunk. Take a mayor who makes the following announcement exclusively on his Facebook page. Quote, "Pursuant to Municipal Ordinance 22.1, I am temporarily suspending enforcement of alternate side parking rules." The post's express invocation of state authority, its immediate legal effect, and the fact that the order is not available elsewhere make clear that the mayor is purporting to discharge an official duty. If, by contrast, the mayor merely repeats or shares otherwise available information, for example, by linking to the parking announcement on the city's webpage, it is far less likely that he is purporting to exercise the power of his office. Instead, it is much more likely that he is engaging in private speech related to his public employment, or concerning information learned during that employment. Hard-to-classify cases require awareness that an official does not necessarily purport to exercise his authority simply by posting about a matter within it. He might post job-related information for any number of personal reasons, from a desire to raise public awareness to promoting his prospects for re-election. Moreover, many public officials possess a broad portfolio of governmental authority that includes routine interaction with the public, and it may not be easy to discern a boundary between their public and private lives. Yet these officials, too, have the right to speak about public affairs in their personal capacities. Lest any official lose that right, it is crucial for the plaintiff to show that the official is purporting to exercise state authority in specific posts. And when there is doubt, additional factors might cast light. For example, an official who uses government staff to make a post will be hard-pressed to deny that he was conducting government business. One last point. The nature of the technology matters to the state action analysis. Freed performed two actions to which Lindke objected. He deleted Lindke's comments and blocked him from commenting again. So far as deletion goes, the only relevant posts are those from which Lindke's comments were removed. Blocking, however, is a different story, because blocking operated on a page-wide basis. A court would have to consider whether Freed had engaged in state action with respect to any post on which Lindke wished to comment. The bluntness of Facebook's blocking tool highlights the cost of a mixed-use social media account. If page-wide blocking is the only option, a public official might be unable to prevent someone from commenting on his personal posts without risking liability for also preventing comments on his official posts. A public official who fails to keep personal posts in a clearly designated personal account therefore exposes himself to greater potential liability. The state action doctrine requires Lindke to show that Freed, 1, had actual authority to speak on behalf of the state on a particular matter, and 2, purported to exercise that authority in the relevant posts. To the extent that this test differs from the one applied by the Sixth Circuit, we vacate its judgment and remand the case for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. It is so ordered. We've come to the end of this opinion. Until next episode, thanks for listening to What SCOTUS Wrote Us.